This podcast is part of the Midwest Podcast Network. Find out more about our other shows and how to support our network at MidwestPodcastNetwork.com.
Welcome to Horror Movie Yearbook.
Hi.
I'm Tim.
I'm Willie.
How's it going, Willie?
It's going.
Good.
Yeah, it's going. I don't know. Things are good.
We had a get-together on Friday.
Friday we did. 13th. We celebrated Friday the 13th by watching some Friday the 13th.
Tommy Jarvis trilogy.
The Tommy Jarvis trilogy, yes. And the group dwindled throughout the night. Some people were able to stay. Me and you.
They seemed to dwindle during part five. They started to fade off.
Yeah.
And then six. Six is almost a shock to the system after five.
Uh-huh.
Because six is like well directed.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because I had asked. I asked Gojo, who's been on our show before, on our Sleepaway Camp commentary. So you guys are probably familiar with him. But I asked him. I said, you know, hey, have you seen any of these before? And he said, no, I didn't. I said, well, which one's your favorite? He goes, six is the best. I'm like, okay. So yeah. That's pretty much what I anticipated, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, six, then four, then five is what he said.
Okay.
So which in quality, yeah.
That's where I'm at.
Sure.
But I have good feelings towards all of them.
I like all three of those.
I do too.
Yeah. That might be my favorite chunk of the series there, four, five, and six.
Yeah, if you break it up into threes.
Because well, four is kind of a perfectly quintessential Jason movie. Like it takes all the good stuff about one, two, and three and kind of like goes nuts with it, right?
Right.
And then five is just so batshit, kind of wonky and crazy that
there's so much weird stuff that happens in five.
It's getting crazy in five. Yeah. And then six is like just a really well-made film.
Yeah, it's good. It's funny.
Self-referential before that was a thing, you know?
Yeah. So if you break it up to threes, then yeah, it'd be one through three.
Which is also a kind of a cool trilogy too.
Yep. Four, five, six. Seven, eight, nine.
That's the weird ones.
That's the weakest of them.
Those are the gimmick ones.
Then I go 10... Freddy vs. Jason remake.
Yeah.
Which are not barely a trilogy. Really.
Yeah, I like to break them into threes, though. It's fun.
Yeah.
7, 8, 9 would be like the gimmicky one.
Yes.
Because you've got, okay, let's have him fight a psychic girl.
Yeah.
Or a telekinetic girl. Okay, let's have him go to New York. Okay, let's have him die again.
Those you were know? All param. No, wait.
No, New Line picked it up in the ninth installment. So.
Okay.
7 and 8 make a decent pair, though.
Yeah, they do. They make
nine is kind of its own beast.
Yeah.
But,
nine fits probably better with, like, if you were to go 9, 10.
Yeah.
Lord, this conversation.
Yeah. Anyway. It was fun.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah. I enjoyed it. It made me want to watch more.
Absolutely. I hope it inspired our friends to watch more. I don't think it did, but you never know. I'll just have another Friday
the 13th. There's always hope.
I got a new couch, so I'll invite everybody over to see my
new
couch.
You do have a new couch. Very nice, big, sectional.
Yes.
Leather.
Very.
I'm coming back over.
The way you said sectional sounded very, very sultry. Very nice sectional.
Yeah. We got some business to take care of here.
What do we got to take care of, Tim?
Hey, you're listening to this on the Midwest Podcast Network. Make sure to check out the Game Nerds.
Yeah.
While you're at it. After you're done listening to us, just click a couple times on the podcast app. Episode 70. Metroid, Samus Returns, Golf Story, and more.
Ooh.
Golf Story is like this weird like RPG, I guess.
Well, does it take place during like, the Gulf War or what?
No, like golf. Like
oh, golf.
Yeah, like
the game of golf.
Like Tiger Woods.
The greatest game ever played.
Yeah. It's like a golfing RPG. Apparently like there was a Mario RPG made by Nintendo. I'm getting this totally wrong probably, but there was back when like NES was around.
Yeah.
And like this plays a lot like that.
Well, Super Mario RPG. For
yeah,
Super
but this
Nintendo,
was
right?
I think I think it was actually Mario Golf for Game Boy, the original Game Boy.
It played like this.
It played like this. It was like a weird, like RPG that featured golf. I don't know either. But it's one of the cheaper games on the Switch. And then Samus Returns, I think, is a 3DS game.
All right.
Mario Odyssey comes out in a couple weeks, so.
That's all you care about.
That's all I care about.
That's all you care about.
Check that out. Check out Gone to Texas so you can catch up on Preacher.
Preacher.
Check out Westworld. FM. I think Westworld's coming back at some point.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. They've talked a bit about it. I think there might be like a teaser trailer or something. So.
We'll have more James Marsden in our life.
After. Yeah.
Hopefully they'll make a Disturbing Behavior part two.
One can only hope.
Yeah. Willie, we have any feedback this week?
We don't.
Okay. Perfect.
Yeah. I don't think we got any.
Not perfect, actually. Send us some feedback at horrormovieyearbook@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter at horrormovieyearbook.
At HM Yearbook.
HM Yearbook.
Twitter's mean to us.
Yeah, did somebody get... Oh, it's, like, too long.
Yeah, like, your handle can only be so long, too. Right. I mean, I get it. It's yeah. Cool. You don't want anything too crazy, so...
HM Yearbook, find us on Facebook, send us some feedback. We would love to hear from you. You guys are awesome. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, we haven't determined our next... whenever we wind up doing a new commentary.
Oh, that's right.
What we're going to do. So, that'd be kind of cool to get some commentary suggestions, because I don't have a specific idea yet. Yeah, that'd be kind of nice.
Oh, one other thing, Willie.
Yeah.
It's our 1 year anniversary.
Happy anniversary, Tim.
Yeah, we started this thing last year, so.
Yeah, I'm happy about it, you know.
Yeah, me too. What was what's your favorite part of the past year? I know mine.
My favorite part of the past year? You mean on the show?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Do you have a favorite episode?
My favorite episode/part is when your wife made us watch the Demonic Toys movies.
Is that your favorite?
Yeah, and then she had to watch them too, and then she realized what a huge mistake she made.
Yeah, she realized after we got into like the second one, I think. She's like, this is... Like, I think she got through that first one, and she's like...
Oh, well, sorry.
All right, like, you know, it's not great, but like, you know, I mean, her and I have both watched plenty of schlocky stuff, and we've survived it in the past, but yeah, that... I don't know, man. That one, it almost broke her, which was surprising to me because, yeah.
Well, she thought it was going to be fun, like Leprechaun was. Leprechaun was a lot of fun
because
all of them are at a level
those.
Above what we get from the Demonic Toys sequels.
Yeah, the Leprechaun movies were better. So, there is that. I was just checking out. You know what's funny? As I said, we didn't have any feedback, and I just wanted to check and make sure. I was pretty sure we didn't. But if I missed somebody, if I was wrong, I apologize. Just yell at me. It's my fault. But yeah, no. If anybody... my favorite... sorry, I'm totally off track here.
It's fine.
My favorite episode of ours... Man, that's tough. For some reason, I remember I liked our conversations about Hellraiser. That sticks out for some
reason. Those are
fun. Yeah, we talked a lot about Frank Cotton.
We had a pretty good OJ episode, if I recall.
Yeah, OJ heavy. Yeah, that was good.
One of those 90s one had a lot of OJ. A
lot of OJ, yep. But no, that's good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think there's an episode I haven't had fun recording.
No, that's nice. So.
Yep, and there was I had a great time on our commentary episode too.
Yeah, those are fun.
Yeah, both of them. Yeah, a lot of good moments there. Especially, you know, Jason Takes Manhattan was a lot of fun. Because that's one I didn't necessarily expect that to win that poll, and I was happily surprised it did because it just that kind of deserves a commentary, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
I think we gave it the proper.
I think we did.
Looking over.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, been a lot of fun. So.
Yeah, happy 1 year, Tim.
Happy 1 year anniversary.
I didn't buy anything.
We should just spend the whole show talking about
how great we are.
Oh, great.
let's do that. Yeah, anybody who's still listening it would be like, all right, I'm out. Can't handle these guys anymore.
Willie, we're going to go back in time.
Cool. We do that.
We're not going to go that far back.
No?
We're going to punch in 2007 on the old time machine dash.
A decade ago?
10 years ago.
Hard to believe, huh?
Yeah, I'll be heading back to my senior year of Central Michigan University once we get in this bad boy.
I'll be heading back to when I turn 21.
Nice, nice.
My 21st birthday was something else.
Hit me with the time machine, and then we'll talk about it.
Shibba-dum-ding-dong!
Willie, tell me about your 21st birthday.
I'll tell you how I ended my night. Singing karaoke, Willie Nelson karaoke, at a hole-in-the-wall bar.
Which song?
I don't remember. I don't remember. I don't think I could name a single Willie Nelson song right now.
It wasn't On the Road Again?
No, but I sang it like a champ. The words go in front of you when you scroll in front of you, so you're all set. But I was singing Willie Nelson karaoke, And this karaoke bar was less a bar and more of like a, it was honest to God, like a mobile home.
Where was it at?
I don't remember.
Around here?
Ish. I think it was downriver somewhere.
Okay.
And this gentleman I was singing with, he was 87 years old.
Was this a bar or was this someone's trailer?
It was a bar.
Okay.
Yep. And he was 87 years old and his name was Smokey. That's what he said his name was.
Nice.
And he said he's there every night with his wife and they sing Willie Nelson songs
together. Aw.
And he duetted with me.
Oh, on your birthday.
On my birthday. Yeah, he heard it was my birthday and he wanted me to duet with him. So.
Perfect.
I said, you pick the song, Smokey. There's a picture of me and Smokey somewhere. I can dig it up.
Okay, good.
Yeah. I don't look good in the picture.
I would imagine, no.
Smokey looks good, though.
How could he not?
Smokey.
Well, I mean, it was probably his trailer, so.
It might have been.
Yeah.
I hope he's still with us.
He'd be 97 right now?
Yeah. He looked good, though.
I hope he's still out there.
I hope so, too. I hope he's still singing karaoke at that bar I'll never remember.
Yeah, I have no idea where
he's at. No, it was alarming. But anyway, it was fun. So, yeah.
Excellent. Well, good. Some other stuff happened in 2007.
Yeah, what else?
Not all of it as good as that. No. Apple announced the release of the very first iPhone during January of 2007.
Apple the iPhone 1?
Which I assume was, a lot of people are listening on right now. Steve Jobs revealed the product during one of his famous keynote addresses. The touchscreen mobile phone had been in development since 2005 and cost over $150 million to create, and it was only available through AT&T at first.
Oh, wow.
I think I remember that.
Didn't know that.
A student on Virginia Tech campus goes on a killing spree April 16th, leaving over 30 students dead.
Holy crap. Was that 10 years ago?
10 years ago. Yeah.
I was just reading about that because obviously with all the Las Vegas stuff, you get looking up what actually took place, and then it like links you to another thing. And I was like reminded of like how many horrible things have happened in the last 10 years. And that I didn't realize that was 10 years ago.
That was 10 years ago. I remember I was on campus.
Were you?
When that happened. Yeah. Yeah. It was crazy.
That's horrible.
Yeah, it was awful. Fuck that guy. Yeah. The Mitchell Report is published, which shows the use of anabolic steroids and human growth hormones is widespread in Major League Baseball. Yeah, I would say so, because if you recall, Barry Bonds, who I believe still holds the record, Barry Bonds, he was like an athletic, skinnier guy when he was younger. All of a sudden, he turned into the Hulk.
Yeah. Yeah, Barry was juicing.
Yeah, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, all those guys. There were a lot of guys that were on the juice.
God, those two were such a big deal, man.
Yeah, I remember that.
The kind of competition between the two.
Yep.
And then they were both frauds.
Yeah, pretty much.
Weren't they both busted
I think they were both busted.
Yeah.
Sammy Sosa looks crazy now. Like, he has, like, lost, like, pigment, I guess, in his skin.
Okay.
He's, like, he's not, like, a white guy. He's, like, pink.
Oh, wow.
He's crazy.
Wow.
He does not look anything like
Sammy Sosa.
Sammy Sosa.
Wow. I didn't know.
The U.S. housing the U.S. housing bubble bursts when year-on-year homes prices dropped up to 2 to 15% in areas of the country, causing increasing numbers of foreclosures. I struggled through that little bullet point there.
Well, this would have been a good time to buy a house.
It would have been.
Yeah.
This was what the Christian Bale movie was based on.
The Big Short?
Yeah.
Yep. Which, yeah. Buddy of mine bought his house around this time.
Yeah, did he?
Got it for a fair price.
Very nice. Yeah, that's going to be a bummer for a couple of years there. U.S. private security firm Blackwater is banned by the Iraqi government from operating in Iraq following civilian shootings. Gordon Brown becomes the new British Prime Minister. Congrats, Gordon. Way to go. The final Harry Potter book is published. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. Yeah, I remember that. I bought that the night it came out, I believe.
Do you remember those jerks that would post YouTube videos where they drive like next to the line of people after the bookstore and they'd be reading from pages in the book?
And someone...
They're like, so and so dies on page such and such.
Yeah, and then there was one where like a woman goes, no!
She loses her mind. I mean, like, on one hand, that's like the meanest thing I've ever seen, and those guys should probably have been beat up for it. But on the other hand, I'm like, it's kind of funny.
It's funny. I mean,
at the end of the day, it's not the end of the world, but that is a bummer for those people that are in the line.
Yeah.
You know, that sucks.
No, it really did. It was a really shitty thing.
Seriously.
But it is kind of funny. NBC Universal launches Chiller, the first U.S. cable satellite channel devoted to horror programming.
Yeah.
Can't believe that. Chiller is still kicking, if I recall.
Is it really?
I think so. FearNet died.
Yeah.
And I always liked FearNet.
It's too bad.
FearNet was kind of cool.
That's too bad.
Shudder is still around. I don't even know. That's like an on-demand service that has a streaming.
Mm-hmm.
But none of those, I don't know, cable TV is so weird. Well, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, we could talk about that for a while.
Yeah.
We're not going to, though.
No. You'll remember this one, because this was a really stupid news story. A guerrilla ad campaign for Cartoon Network's Aqua Teen Hunger Force. Blinking electronic signs hung on bridge overpasses and near transit stations featuring characters, including they caused multiple bomb scares in Boston. Do you remember this?
No.
Oh, my God. They put, like, the Aqua Teen guys on these weird,
yeah,
like
the
light
French
up.
Fries and the...
Yeah, the French fries. They put them on a light-up thing, and everybody was freaking out in Boston because they didn't... They did it with, like, out telling anybody in the city, like, what was going on.
Wow.
And, like, I don't think even the police knew, and, like, they were like, are these bombs?
Oh, wow.
A bomb scare.
Yeah, that, I mean, wow.
And then the last one. Entertainment related, the Writers Guild of America goes on strike.
Yes.
I remember that.
Yeah, because all the shows I liked sucked for a little bit afterwards.
Yeah, it was Conan O'Brien's best time, though.
Yes.
Because he was just screwing around.
Yes. He was great. Everything was else
amazing.
Was kind of rough.
No, yeah.
I remember, like, selfishly, I was pissed that it messed up Lost for me a little bit for a while there.
Messed up Lost. I believe it messed up quite a bit of movies.
Too. Yeah.
Quite a few movies, too.
Yep.
But once we get into the top 10 movies of the year, you'll see that we were at a real good spot.
Yeah, that was one thing I was really interested in, yeah.
But we're going to do songs first, because that's what first. Number 10, Fergie featuring Ludacris, Glamorous. Number 9, Nelly Furtado, Say It Right. Number 8, Akon featuring Snoop Dogg, I Want to Love You, which I believe was something else on the album version. You know what?
Okay.
Love had nothing to do with it.
Okay.
Oh, my God. Number 7, Plain White Tees, Hey There, Delilah.
That's the first song on this list that I knew for, like, 100%. I know the song.
Okay.
I like the other ones, I'm sure if I heard them, I would remember them. But, like, that's the first one that I recognized. That one was rough.
Yikes. Number 6, Carrie Underwood, Before He Cheats.
I know that one.
An intense song.
A very intense song.
A preemptive strike against a man who has not cheated.
Yeah, isn't that? Yeah, I never could figure out the song.
Yeah, it seems to be they were in a poor relationship to begin with, and she did not trust him.
So she's like, I'm going to ruin stuff.
No, wait, no, wait. Now that I'm thinking about it, no, he did cheat, and then next time he's going to think before he cheats.
Okay.
But it still seems to be he's going to cheat, so they should break up.
Yeah, that's probably the more logical.
Yeah. Someone wrote that for Carrie, I think. So.
Yeah, sure.
I don't think she did that.
No.
I don't think she hurt anybody's car. Maybe she did. I don't know.
She might have. I don't know. I mean, I hope she didn't.
She was justified in breaking that guy's car.
I don't. Look, I can't blame her. You know, that's a crime of passion right there. But,
it is.
You know.
I just hope it wasn't.
I hope cooler heads prevail.
Me too. No room for property damage on the Horror Movie Yearbook podcast show.
No.
T-Pain featuring Young Jock, Buy You a Drink, Shouty Snappin'. Number 5.
I'm happy you said that.
I don't think I remember that one very well.
I'm sure I'd know it if I heard it.
Fergie makes her second appearance on this list. Big Girls Don't Cry.
Oh, my God.
Number 3, Gwen Stefani featuring Akon, The Sweet Escape. Oh, my God, I hate that song, too.
Oh, yeah. I don't like that. No, I don't like it. Anything post No Doubt, Gwen Stefani. I like Gwen Stefani. She seems like she's pretty cool, but anything post No Doubt, I kind of check out.
Right. Akon's second appearance on this list. Good for you, Akon.
Didn't he like punt somebody off stage though?
yeah. Like someone got on stage with Akon.
It was a woman, I think, like, and he thrust it into her to the point where she like fired off stage.
Yeah, I thought he body slammed someone off stage. Like a man, he picked up and like pressed him over his
like
head
gorilla
and
pressed
tossed
him.
Yeah.
Whoa. I thought he like. Maybe he did both. I don't know. There was a year. This
basically, do not get on Akon stage. Right?
There was a year there, like 08 or 09, where like it was not a good idea to get on stage.
With Akon?
With anybody. Because there were like 3 or 4 different music artists that like wounded an audience member.
Yeah, unless you're invited on stage.
You shouldn't
You should not get on stage.
That's... I think the only time maybe is like a metal show. I think that's still acceptable.
Is it?
But I don't know that it should be.
No.
Because all that stuff that happened with like Dimebag Darrell.
That guy shot him while he was on stage?
Yeah, the guy walked up on stage and just
shot him?
In the head while he was playing.
Okay, for some reason I thought that was like from the crowd.
No, he was on stage.
Yeah, we gotta,
We should probably cut that out.
depending on what Akon did, if he thrust the woman into the crowd, that's not good. But if the guy got on stage, he couldn't get pressed.
I'll have to look into this. I'll look into this. Okay. I'll confirm later in the episode.
I don't want this to be like our Matt Lauer.
Yeah, yeah.
Slander.
Let's not slander the good name of Akon.
Number two, Rihanna featuring Jay-Z, Umbrella.
I like that song.
What's that?
I like that song.
Yeah, I like that song.
I heard it the other day and I didn't turn it off.
And number one, Beyonce, Irreplaceable.
I don't remember that Beyonce song.
I think that's
song.
The one that goes, "You must not know about me."
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
I didn't know that was number one. I didn't think that was that big a hit, but tells you where I am. Oh, Willie, this is not a good top 10 movie list. I'm just
Yeah, you made it seem like things were not
This is ugly.
Good.
Number 10, 300.
Okay.
So it gets off to a decent start. 300 one time, I believe, around maybe in 2007, I went to a bachelor party at a cabin in the woods.
And okay.
The only DVD I think we had was 300, and it played the entire day.
Oh,
and
my
I have
God.
Not watched 300 since.
I've seen it once.
Okay.
I saw the sequel, too, or the prequel.
I kind of liked that one.
It was all right, yeah.
All right.
I mean, I like Eva Green. Like, she's cool, so... She's cool.
She's cool.
She's fantastic. So she kind of kept the sequel together for me, but the original, it's fine. I mean, it's an interesting movie.
I like it. It's a good action movie.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. It's got
Gerard
some cool
Butler's really fun in it.
Yeah, and it's Zack Snyder, like, in the perfect, like, Zack Snyder world for him. Yeah. So, yeah, I dig it.
Number nine, Alvin and the Chipmunks.
They're very popular films.
They still make them, don't they? I don't know.
They probably do.
They make that in the Smurfs.
I feel like they're like the direct-to-video stage with those by this point.
Probably.
Yeah, he body-slammed a guy.
Okay.
It was a different... I believe it was... who did... God dang it. Juvenile, I believe, is the one who thrusted a woman off the stage.
But, well, lived up to his name.
But it was like the same year that the Akon thing happened. I'm sorry. Moving on.
What a weird year. Number eight, National Treasure, Book of Secrets. That's the sequel, right?
Is it the sequel? Okay.
Yeah.
My dad really likes those movies.
I have only seen the first one, so I can't make a judgment on.
I haven't seen either ones.
Number seven, The Bourne Ultimatum. Is that the third one?
Yes.
Okay, I like that one. Number six.
I've only seen one of those movies.
Oh, so you've only seen the
Jeremy Renner one. Is that weird? That's weird.
So
right?
Weird.
Okay.
That's the only one I haven't seen.
Okay.
So between us, we've seen all the Bourne movies.
Oh, have you seen the new one though?
I have.
Okay, then we've seen them all. Yeah,
yep.
Good.
Yep. I went and saw that one because I'm like, oh, good, it's not the Jeremy Renner one
right.
anymore. I don't have We're to not, watch
we
it.
Won't be starting a Bourne podcast anytime soon.
Number six, I Am Legend. Willie, do you have any I Am Legend thoughts?
Before the monsters show up, it's really cool.
Okay.
And then they show up.
Yeah, they're not real good monsters.
No,
they?
And the thing is they shot it initially with like guys in suits.
Yeah.
Like prosthetics and stuff. And they looked way better. And then the studio was like, no, CG. And they looked like crap. So.
Yeah, I saw that in the theater too. I haven't seen it since. He starts crying during Shrek in it, if I recall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, who doesn't?
Sweet moment. Yeah. Number five, Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Oh, my God.
That's a good
Never
one.
Mind. I love this one because let me tell you why I love Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. I don't like that book is the one I don't like
okay.
of all the Harry Potter books. And they literally cut out like 75% of it.
And you're
and
totally cool.
Just,
with it.
They're just like, let's just have them fly around and shoot each other with magic. Five by me.
Works for me.
Yeah.
I like that movie.
Yeah. Number four. Yeah. Here's where it gets a little shaky. Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End, which I believe is the third one.
Oh, God.
You don't remember that?
The second and third, they shot back to back, right? Like a Lord of the Rings style, like all one big movie, right? Wasn't that a
yes,
thing?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, because neither one was good.
One of them had Keith Richards in it.
Yeah, I don't know which one this is.
I don't know either.
I don't know. It's got Bill Nighy as the squid guy, which is pretty cool.
Okay.
I guess.
One of them, they say parlay a lot.
Yeah.
They just go parlay.
And puppet.
Yeah.
They call her a puppet. I don't know.
Number three, Transformers. Yeah, maybe I shouldn't be too mean
the
about
first
this
one.
This is the first one.
First one's all right.
I thought this was the sequel.
First one's all right. I had fun with it.
The first one has my man from Friday the 13th in it. Same
yeah?
character.
The guy who plays Trent.
Trent.
Yeah,
he's
pretty
the
sweet.
Best part.
He's pretty sweet. Your boy Tyrese is in it too.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is. Screaming his head off.
Yeah, he's mad.
Nobody can... Yeah, Transformers drives me nuts. Nobody sees, like, how there's parts in it where the Transformers are stealthy.
Doesn't make sense. No.
Like, I almost walked out of the theater during that.
You know what I liked about the first one, though, was, like, it had a little bit of, like an E.T. vibe, yeah. Which is kind of fun.
The Bumblebee.
It was kind of cute.
Yeah.
And, like, at least I knew, like, which Transformers were which. Like, I knew who all the good guys were. I was like, oh, that's Ratchet. That's Jazz.
Yeah.
You know? And then, like, the sequels happened, and I don't know anything that's going on. No. It's just stuff crashing into other stuff.
I gotta see the new one, though. It's got Merlin. Like, the actual, like, the word.
Doesn't, like, Stanley Tucci
Stanley
play him?
Tucci, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
That's pretty cool.
We gotta get through this top 10 movies list.
All right.
Shrek the Third at number 2.
Okay.
Don't remember that one. And then number 1, director of many a good horror movies, his third movie, which he did not enjoy in this series, that would be Spider-Man 3, directed by one Mr. Sam Raimi.
Mm.
Spider-Man 3 is an interesting movie for me.
It's not good.
Yeah, I won't defend it much, but I will say this. It's a big movie in my life because, like, I was on a lot of message boards and, like, reading a lot of reviews at the time, and, like, the build-up to this was toxic, if I recall, online.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me it made a lot of money, so I don't know if Main Street really hated it that much.
Right.
I think most people just kind of shrugged it. Why not? It was the third Spider-Man movie. What do you expect?
Yeah, what'd you want?
Yeah. Everybody's just like, come on.
Yeah, reasonable people are like, well, what did you, it's the third.
It's third. These never turn out good in the third. Third movie's always rough. But at least Richard Pryor wasn't in it. So,
yeah.
But then, like, I was reading all this thing, and then I went and saw it, and I came out and go, that wasn't bad. I liked all the dancing. So it was this weird moment.
I liked all the dancing.
It was this weird moment in my life where I, like, hey, it's okay to have your own opinion on things.
Yeah.
Even if it's wrong. So.
Yeah. I think I was one of those toxic people on the message board, so.
Way to go.
Yep.
Welly, let's talk some horror movies.
Yeah, what the heck
As
are we
if
doing?
Some of those weren't.
What are we doing? Some of those are, yeah.
What are we going to talk about first? We are going to talk about
Hostel 2, right?
We're going to talk about Hostel 2, directed by one Mr. Eli Roth.
Yes.
Pretty big horror director, I'd say.
Has he been knighted yet? Is he Sir Eli Roth yet?
Sir Eli Roth? No, I don't think so.
One would hope that one
Hopefully, if they've seen these Hostel movies, hell no.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
he's put that away. So
he's not a big fan of Europe.
He doesn't seem to be?
No, I don't think so.
Or
people?
Yeah. Interview with him on that Mick Garris podcast that I started listening to today.
Yes.
Very good interview.
Okay.
Mick Garris podcast, Postmortem, I think it's called.
Do you feel like you learned a little bit about Eli Roth as a person?
Yeah, actually, yeah.
Do you? Okay.
I have always really thought he came across, like, really smart.
Sure.
And knowledgeable, especially of horror movies.
Sure.
I've always liked him as a person.
Yeah. No, it's funny because you hear things about him and, I guess, you know, in the industry and from people in the industry that maybe I think that aren't the biggest fans, but anytime I've ever seen him interviewed or you know, behind the scenes or anything, I've kind of enjoyed what he has to say. So
I think some of it too is, and it might be a little bit superficial with him too. He looks kind of like bro-y.
Sure,
he doesn't look
sure.
like a typical horror movie director.
No,
basically.
I get that. And so, maybe he comes off a little bit. Sure,
and
sure.
He probably comes off a little bit too. But I always liked him.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much as movies, but him as a person.
Sure.
Good dude. Hostel Part 2. This is a sequel. What? We decided to do a sequel.
Yeah. So why for Hostel 2 did we break this rule? Would you say?
Because I want to talk about Eli Roth a little bit. I wanted to do an Eli Roth movie. I think he's a big part of what was going on in horror at the time.
Uh-huh.
I think this is a nice capper as well on that entire subgenre of, if we come up with a better name than torture porn, I can't. It's no. What it's most known as.
We're but just going to call it torture porn because that's...
This feels like the end of that cycle.
Yeah, it does.
And I think this movie caps it off in a way.
Sure.
And in a different way than I think I expected.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to do that. I also think it's Ross' best movie, personally.
Yeah, I can't argue with you there.
Yeah.
It's a more interesting movie than the first Hostel, in my opinion.
I think
too.
So, too.
Yeah.
So that's kind of when I do it. We broke our... And also because it's a franchise, technically, but we're not going to do a fight the franchise.
No, I don't want to talk about Hostel 3 or...
No.
Is there a 4?
I think just 3.
There's a third.
There's
okay.
a one. Yeah, the third one's in Vegas, I think.
It's in Las Vegas, that's
yeah.
right.
Yeah. So let's get into the plot real quick.
Sure.
Beth Lorna and Whitney, three young American women traveling abroad in Rome, decide to take a weekend excursion. Lured from their intended destination by a beautiful acquaintance, the women anticipate a stay at a luxurious spa. Instead, they become pawns in a grisly game designed to entertain wealthy deviants from around the world. I love wealthy deviants.
Wealthy deviants, yeah.
Released in 2007. This did not make as much money as the first one, if I recall. It kind of bombed. It was released in summer. He's still kind of bitter about that in his interviews.
Sure.
But I also think it was probably coming at the end of the cycle anyway. I think that
the cycle didn't last long.
No, it was like 2003-ish, 2004-ish, I think, to 2007, really.
Yeah. And I'm going to say this right now, and I really don't want this to sound like a condemnation of any of these guys, because I like various entries in all of their filmographies, but this feels like kind of the last straw of the Splat Pack. I think in the public eye, kind of being viewed as a failed resurgence for horror.
Yeah, who do we have in that? We had like
Zombie, and I'd say, I mean, yeah, it was Zombie, Alex Aja,
yep,
Roth.
What's our boy? Neil Marshall.
And I hate to say it, but like I said, I like a number of movies in all their catalogs, but doesn't this feel like this is kind of like Eli Roth was arguably the biggest of the bunch there. Rob Zombie had the clout of being Rob Zombie before he made movies, but Eli Roth was the biggest straight director out of that, don't you think? Like, Hostel had buzz.
Cabin Fever had buzz. Remember, Cabin Fever came out with that Peter Jackson quote all over the poster. Hostel had the Quentin Tarantino Presents, if I recall.
So, yeah, Eli was right behind. I think the failure of Hostel 2 and I guess the torture porn subgenre kind of weirdly coincides in like a couple year span with, I think, people falling a little out of favor with Rob Zombie.
Because
when did the Halloween remake come out?
That was this year.
Yep. And then Neil Marshall released The Descent in 2008. And that was kind of his last, like, really well-loved horror feature.
He kind of drifted away from horror.
He did,
more action.
No, absolutely, yeah. He did. And like I said, I'm not trying to knock any of those guys, because I like those guys, but doesn't this seem like it's kind of, like, in a way that the to quote a little Game of Thrones, the princes that were promised didn't quite deliver on the promise a little bit. That seems fair, right?
I think so. And yeah. I think they're all guys. The thing is, they're all talented guys.
Incredibly.
And I think, you know, like Eli Roth has said in interviews too, like, I don't necessarily want to be a horror director.
I don't think like any of them felt like they had to be.
No, those are
maybe
just
Aja, but
yeah, maybe Aja, but Zombie's kind of been the same way. Zombie was a musician before that.
He would like to do other stuff.
What's his name? Yeah, like, what's his name? Branched out. Neil Marshall branched out.
He's done a lot of Game of Thrones. There you go.
Yeah.
It all comes back around.
But Roth is just like, these are just movies like I knew. Like, I just wanted to make movies. Like, I just wanted to tell stories. And like, these are the stories I know.
And do you wonder, though, I don't want to stick on this too long, but do you think maybe that immediate, like, that immediate pressure from the press or from film journalists of like, this is the Splat Pack, they're going to bring horror back. Do you think that pressure might have made the whole thing crumble like prematurely?
Maybe a little bit.
It did. I mean, yeah. like because to me, that you throw a label on these guys that maybe not all of them even wanted to have to begin with.
No, especially when you have someone like Zombie this year would go on to remake Halloween of all things.
Yeah.
So you have that added pressure on top of that.
Yeah. You got to wonder. I don't know. I just find that fascinating that the stars kind of align weirdly for the Splat Pack there and things start to kind of fall off. But anyway, Hostel 2.
Yeah, Willie, what did you think of Hostel 2 this time?
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. Hostel's a mixed bag because you know what? Eli Roth for me is a mixed bag. So, and I'll be the first to admit that. It's funny because every Eli Roth movie I've seen, I've half liked.
Right. Even his newer ones?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Like, yeah. I've half liked everything he's ever done. And I think what's interesting about Eli Roth is he's a man of, I don't want to say contradictory because that's not fair, but there's quite a dichotomy in his sensibilities. Because when he goes to get dark, he can get dark, 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 dark. I mean, he can get gritty and gross and grimy. I'd say Hostel 1's a really good example of how grimy he can get and how nasty he can get. And definitely chunks of Cabin Fever. But then when he wants to, like, then he sometimes he can't resist the all fart joke.
No, right? He loves gags.
Yeah. and I think I like dark, nasty Eli Roth a little more than I like gag Eli Roth. Some of his gags work, don't get me wrong, and I think a couple of them in this movie are really funny. The severed head soccer is very funny to me.
Oh my gosh.
Because it kind of ends the movie.
I had totally forgot that's
so
how it
I.
ends the movie.
But it's kind of so insane and absurd that you kind of have to laugh at it at the end there.
Yeah.
But I think that sometimes the tonal shifts, and I don't mind a movie that blends like comedy and horror, but sometimes there's like really stark tonal shifts in his movies that kind of throw me.
It can be very jarring. I mean, the first one, if I recall, like the first 45 minutes is basically like Porky's. Like it's a like
it's a sex comedy.
It's like bros.
It's a raunchy sex comedy.
Laid.
It's like Last American Virgin.
Yeah,
that's
and then the second half is straight up.
It's horror.
Yeah, you know what? I forgot. Like the first one is more violent than this one.
Yeah.
What sticks with me in this one is the scene with
Heather Matarazzo.
Yeah, Lorna.
That yep. still sticks with me.
Yes.
And part of that, I think we're just segueing right into it. But part of that scene. Part of what bugs me about that scene is you've got a character who is largely unliked by the rest of the characters in the movie, is probably unliked by a lot of the audience that's watching this movie, which is too bad. She seems like a nice girl, you know? She's just very shy and very insecure and kind of whiny and probably kind of a drag to be around when you're trying to have fun and party and stuff. But she seems like a good kid, you know what I mean, in the long run. But she gets, like, horribly murdered. Her last moments of life are like scared and alone and suffering for the amusement of and sexual
pleasure of a woman is laying underneath in a bathtub
as she's bleeding her.
That scene is insane though.
It's rough.
It's like it's pretty memorable.
You know, it is honestly as a set piece as like a like
that's
a,
the problem though. It almost feels like a set piece in the movie because but it's, I kind of...
She just, the issue with that scene, and once again, it's a half and half. Like, with Eli Roth right there, I can just, this individual scene, I like half of, and I like, I dislike the other half. Like, she just kind of gets randomly pulled from the group, and like, killed like midway through the movie, and no one really bats an eyelash at it. I don't know. Like, it's just kind of over, and she's gone.
Yeah, because... Because there is more, yeah, you're right. Because there is more with the women after, before they go to where they go. Yeah.
The characters briefly address her missing, but not much. The woman that kills her is never seen or heard from again.
Yes.
So, like, it just kind of happens. Mm-hmm. It's just a sequence that Eli Roth thought of and was like, let's take that character and put him in there.
And he's right, it's memorable.
Absolutely. I guess I just wish that it was more, like, attached to the rest of the story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. No, I get that.
So, but it's memorable. It's rough too. You feel so bad for her.
I think some of the thing too with this movie and with the, especially the main three, Beth, Lorna, and Whitney, Eli Roth, the best parts of this movie to me aren't involving the main trio of women. Eli Roth gets men better than he gets women, I think.
Oh, that's indisputable.
And I mean that not like not just even in like the bro way of part one, but in the way of the two guys, like
the 9-to-5ers.
Yeah,
yeah. No, he gets this,
that stuff is perfect.
That's the most that is the reason why I said earlier that Hostel 2 isn't more interesting than Hostel 1.
Yeah, those
it's those guys,
Stewart and I can't remember the other guy's name.
The one who's in every TV show ever. those guys are the most interesting part, I think, of the movie.
They are.
Because you've got this really interesting shift. It happens very, you know, it's very obvious where it happens, but you've got the kind of gung-ho, macho, tough guy who wants to, like, I don't know, sow his wild oats by offing some poor young kid. And then you got the guy who's, like, kind of meek and dragged into it.
Mm-hmm.
And they like roll reverse like crazy.
I absolutely it's the best part of the movie because it's almost this commentary on the entire like subgenre to me. Like the audience is in Stewart, Roger Bart, like his shoes, like the kind of meek kind of guy. But there's this in the torture porn subgenre and in the slasher subgenre, maybe not commentary is not the right word I'm looking for, kind of a parody of it.
Oh.
Because at its core, there can be, and we talked about this in the Siskel and Ebert thing, where we didn't agree with them for the most part, but there can be this really misogynistic, gross thing at the center of it. And he puts the audience, like, you're rooting for Bart, like, or for Stewart to just be like, enough.
He totally
just goes for the bloodletting and torture.
Yeah.
He just loses it. And it's all because he's sexually frustrated.
Yep.
And it's almost, he's like, he's kind of a cartoon, but it's also kind of, the last 30 minutes of this movie to me are hysterical.
It's insanity.
It's really funny. It's just, it's black comedy. It feels like, so in a blockbuster movie, everybody's template is, we got to do Empire Strikes Back. Like, yeah, we're doing Empire Strikes Back of Transformers. Mm-hmm. But in horror, it's like, we got to do Evil Dead 2 to Evil Dead 1. Yeah. And this is Evil Dead 2, but it's not Evil Dead 2 in the way of, like, just throw gore at it. It's Evil Dead 2 and, like, let's just screw around a little bit.
Let's go nuts,
and,
yeah,
like, let's kind of spoof things, I think, a little bit. And whether it's intentional or not, it works for me.
No, it does. It does. You're right. The last half hour or so is just, it's hard to call it fun, but it is, you know?
I think it is, too. I wish Lauren German,
mm-hmm,
I wish she was a little stronger in the role.
Yeah.
Because I'm not, she's not great.
Which is interesting because, well, I guess there's quite some time in between, but I think we both really liked her in The Divide.
Oh, she was in that, wasn't
she? She's the lead.
Yeah, she was good in that.
And she's quite strong in that. So, I mean, maybe it's just her kind of growing as an actress and stuff. But yeah, in this one, she's a little, she's not quite as strong as I wanted from the character.
Yeah.
Yeah. Out of the three, she needs to be the one that's kind of the rock, you know, and she doesn't quite...
And it, honestly, that could just be Roth not being real strong with the character either.
Sure.
I mean, because Lorna Whitney, Bijou Phillips is kind of your, like, party girl, and she kind of disappears for the second half of it.
Yeah, she kind of just,
And Lorna's kind of like your shy, nerdy girl, and that's pretty much it. There's not a lot of depth to... any
she's
of
kind
them
of there.
Way. Yeah. Yeah. The depth is with the males in the movie.
The killers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or, well, one of them.
So.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. Did you like the Diodato cameo? Did you notice that?
Yeah. He's
the cannibal, which is hysterical. That's the whole scene is so funny to me.
Yeah.
Because, you know what the best part is? That guy that he's eating, the one that's like trying to seduce the Bijou Phillips character,
mm-hmm,
is in the Harry Potter movies.
Oh, is he?
He's the, like, what's the group of, like, Russian type guys?
Oh, is he Crumb?
Yes.
Yeah. I thought Crumb. I recognized
yeah,
him.
Yeah. He's Victor Crumb. And he's being eaten by the director of Cannibal Holocaust in this film, which is pretty cool. I always thought that was funny.
Yeah.
I also like the brief shots in those rooms like that where you see the other killers kind of doing stuff, the other guys. Like, there's that one bit where she's like walking from room to room, seeing if anybody wants to buy the damaged goods, and so to speak. And there's this one guy, she opens the door and he's just electrocuting a guy, and like he stops to like answer the door, and then he like he's like mm-mm, and he walks away, and then he like starts electrocuting him again. It's really funny to me. Like, it's like, all right, time to get back to work. It's like when you're interrupted from like a knock, like an unexpected knock on your door.
Uh-huh.
You're like in the middle of like washing dishes and you got to go back to it. Like, I don't know, that's what's so funny to me about that scene.
Yeah, I will say this also. I think if you're looking for an Eli Roth, this is like ultimate Roth, to me, because it's funny, it's gory, it has incredible moments. I mean, Roth movies really do have like amazing moments, especially those early horror ones. I'm thinking of The Shaving in Cabin Fever.
Ugh.
It's, oh my god.
Or the listening audience, the finger bang scene from Cabin Fever is rough too.
Yeah. He comes up with some really good ideas, especially when it comes to gore. There's also these weird asides in the movies too, like Cabin Fever has. Is Cabin Fever the one like kid that does karate out of nowhere?
Yeah, that's an odd one. And it's got that kind of weird deputy character.
Yeah.
Who's like Doofy from the Scary Movie series. I don't know.
But this one's got those roving pack of kids.
The bubblegum kids. Yeah.
The bubblegum kids don't work too, because the women in this movie are pretty much prey throughout.
Yeah.
And even the kids are shitty to them. They call them bitches.
Yeah, they're in a runaway. Yeah, not very nice.
So in that way, and that's another interesting part of this movie, I think. I think in like Roth movies, there's some interesting stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2002, we're Americans, we're Not the word I'm looking for.
Globalization?
Yeah, we're Yeah, you know what I mean. We're basically overstepping our bounds into different countries.
Okay, sure.
There's a word I'm looking for, and I'm blowing it. But we're not the most popular people overseas at this point in the world.
Sure.
And this is a commentary on that. It's also imperialism was the word I was looking.
Yes,
for.
Thank you. I was thinking of it too. I was trying to.
But I mean. If horror movies are products of their time and using things to scare people of their time, this is a really fun look back.
No, it is. Yeah. You're right. Yeah, it's a bit of a time capsule.
Look back. I mean, now. Yeah. but you know what I mean.
The other interesting aspect here is with the Lauren German character is kind of the hints at her sexuality too.
Yeah.
Which I find interesting. She's got an interesting relationship with a model that they are. They start the film drawing a male model first and then a female model after. And there's kind of an interesting seduction thing going on there with the female model where she kind of... It doesn't go full on to where, like, it's clearly that, like, Lauren German's character is a lesbian. It doesn't say yes or no, but there is a thing going on there between the two of them. And it's that kind of pseudo-seduction that winds up leading her to be kidnapped and whatnot and go through. And then, of course, she... You know, chops the woman's head off at the end, but
she goes on a chopping spree.
She does, yeah.
Chops old Stuart.
Stuart's
his penis.
Yeah,
she chops it off. He Roth takes the anything resembling subtext of the male castration, and it just makes it straight up text.
Yeah, I don't know. She cuts his penis off,
but
yeah.
It's funny too.
And she feeds it to a dog.
Yeah, there are some dog parts in the last 30 minutes of this.
Yeah, Eli Roth likes his dog attacks, because there's one in Cabin Fever, too.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
It's kind of gross. Isn't there a part two of this movie where they wheel out just chunks of a man?
Yeah, the Stuart's hunting partner. Yeah. Yeah, it's like chunks of him. It's like half a face.
Yeah, the last 30 minutes are really funny.
Yeah, they're nuts. Yeah. No, Hostel 2, it's interesting. It's probably Roth's best movie.
I think it's his most interesting.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think it's worth a watch if you can stomach this kind of stuff. If this isn't your cup of tea, you're not going to like it.
It's almost this weird, like, there are some correlations between the torture porn and the slasher movie boom of the 80s. Because they both kind of, I'm thinking the earlier 80s ones too. They both kind of were only around for a couple years.
Mm-hmm.
They have similarities in.
They do.
Theme and their formats. So there are, but I don't like to revisit a lot of these movies.
Well, and that's the key word in the torture porn thing is the torture part.
Yeah.
I mean, and I hate calling this genre movies that. I feel like there's a couple of movies in this subgenre that are like worth watching for reasons beyond just, oh, I want to see gore.
I think it's a lot like a slasher movie in that way, too.
Yeah, where it almost feels like it demeans an entire...
I think like stuff like Halloween is obviously elevated, and I think stuff like maybe one of the hostels, I think stuff like the first Saw.
Yeah, which gets lumped in with the torture porn
thing. Think Devil's Rejects is an interesting movie.
Sure, there's a few that kind of got, sandwiched in there that I think are worth watching.
But there is some
watching.
Trash, too.
There's some bad ones, too, but... Yeah, I mean, this is not the most watchable movie, and neither is the first, but I think it's worth a look for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that he does a better job here balancing the humor and the horror than he did maybe with Green Inferno.
Yeah,
I had fun with Green Inferno.
Too. I had fun with Knock Knock.
Yeah, I had fun with that too.
It's, but both of those, he's
have some issues.
He's got it. He's trying. I think he's trying to do what he did in the last 30 minutes of this movie.
But for 90 minutes.
Knock Knock and Hostel 2 have a lot in common now that I think about it.
They do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Knock Knock's really funny.
It's hilarious to me. It's a John Wick prequel.
It's straight up trashy, too.
It's super trashy.
I would watch it again, though.
I would. Yeah. I couldn't help myself.
Keanu gives...
He gives
a major performance.
Stunning performance. When you're done watching Hostel Part 2, watch Knock Knock.
Or just watch the pizza clip.
Yeah. Yeah. Look up, like, Knock Knock Pizza on YouTube, and you'll probably find it.
Yeah. It might spoil the movie for you, but whatever.
That's fine, though.
All right, Willie. Have we said what we need to say?
Hostel 2.
All right. Willie, we're going to play a game here. We've played it before. I think we ripped it off from another podcast.
Yeah, that's cool.
Whatever. It's tagline. Tagline Takedown. We should rename it to something now, though.
Yeah.
So we can call it like Terror Taglines.
Yeah.
The 2007 edition. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to give you some taglines from movies in 2007. And
okay.
I'm going to see if you can name them based on the tagline.
Okay.
There's some stupid stuff in here, so get ready.
Okay, I'm excited.
And you can get a hint, too.
All right. I might, yeah.
All right, the first one we have, Evil Has a Destiny.
Evil Has a Destiny. What year are these from?
All 2007.
Oh,
all
okay.
2007 horror movies.
Evil Has a Destiny. Well, is it Halloween?
It is. Rob
yeah.
Zombie's Halloween.
Yeah.
Yep. Very good. Second one here, we've got Quarantine, Eradication, Sterilization, Repopulation, Reinfection.
28 Weeks Later.
You are 2 for 2. Impressive. This one might be kind of easy for you. Welcome to Barrow, Alaska. And then it says inhabitants, and it scratches out on the poster 588, and it says 15 underneath.
30 Days a Night?
Yep. 3 for 3. Oh. You're
doing okay.
I don't think you're going to get this one.
All right.
You scream, you die.
You scream, you die. Is it One Missed Call?
No.
Okay.
You want a hint?
Sure.
The hint is when we worked at the video store, is everybody's scariest movie.
Oh, Dead Silence. Yeah, Dead Silence.
All right, just a couple more here.
Okay.
What happens when you sleep?
What happens when you sleep? What a stupid tagline.
Yeah.
Give me a hint.
It's a found footage movie.
Oh, Paranormal Activity.
Yep.
That's a dumb tagline for that.
No, it's right.
It's so crappy.
Is that Toby? He's the ghost, right?
Yeah.
Toby's the ghost.
Toby.
I have when you sleep, Toby.
Tobes.
Causes havoc.
Tobes is hanging out.
This is actually my favorite. Well, it's my second favorite one. Americans have no imagination.
Americans have no imagination. Is it Hostile too?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that one's kind of fun.
Okay.
This one is amazing. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Oh God. Oh man. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
This one's so dumb.
Give me a hint.
It's from one of your favorite franchises, but not necessarily a movie franchise that is your favorite.
Favorite franchises, but is this like a Resident Evil movie? Mm-hmm. Is it like, hold on. I can't throw all this, Afterlife?
No. It would take place before Afterlife.
Extinction. Yeah, okay. All right.
That's so dumb.
That's terrible.
Does that take place in Vegas? That's the one with the bus.
It's in like a desert.
It's in the desert, right?
I think it's probably in Vegas.
In the Crows. It's the Crows and Mike Epps.
Yeah.
That's a good one. It's one of my favorites.
Directed by
Russell
Mulcahy.
Yeah.
Of Highlander fame.
Yeah, if I'm going to pick a Resident Evil sequel.
That's the one you're going with? Sure.
It's going to be Extinction.
Sure.
All right, final one here. Belief divides them, mystery surrounds them, but fear changes everything.
Belief divides them, mystery surrounds them, but fear changes. Is it The Mist?
It is The Mist.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are we talking about The Mist?
We're talking about The Mist right
Sweet.
Now.
Sweet.
Yeah. How about that?
I'm excited.
Yeah. After a powerful storm damages their main home. Oh, can you believe a Stephen King
story that takes place in Maine? Yeah. Hard to believe.
David Drayton. I like that.
Drew Struzan.
David Drayton, that's a Stan Lee name, too.
It
and
is.
His young son head into town to gather food and supplies. Soon afterward, a thick fog rolls in and engulfs the town, trapping the Draytons and others in the grocery store. Terror mounts as deadly creatures reveal themselves outside. But that may be nothing compared to the threat within, where a zealot calls for a sacrifice. I like that the Google summary goes out of its way to call out Marcia Gay Harden's character.
Yeah, you're a fan.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you got a bit of a crush on Mrs. Carmody.
This
you?
Is a beautiful. She's wonderful in this. She's hot.
Yeah, you
she's,
like her?
Yeah, she's smoking hot.
Are you joking
this.
When you say that?
She's a beautiful woman, but
she is.
Her
yeah,
character.
She...
Not smoking hot.
I'm like, is this like a weird like thing? Like, do you have like a fetish I'm unaware of for like scary religious,
scary religious people zealous? That scream and call for human sacrifice?
Yeah.
Yes, that's my.
Okay,
thing.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, you are into religious horror, so maybe that's an explanation for it.
It is. I was raised Catholic, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Weird jokes.
Okay.
Willie, this is a Stephen King. You ever read the short story?
No.
I have, but it's been so long.
Okay.
I know it's a little bit different than this.
Yeah, it's not too far off, right? Minus the finale?
Definitely the ending is different.
Yeah, we should say right now up front, like, having the end of the film ruined for you in this case is, it would be bad.
Yes, we're going to spoil it because you can't talk about this movie without talking about the ending.
No, you can't.
So, make sure that you, like, as you're listening to this, hit that 15-second forward button a bunch of times if you don't want
to
know the
just ending. Don't listen to the rest of the episode until you see the mist.
Yeah.
Just do it.
Yeah, skip it because we're going to talk about some good stuff later.
I know, but yeah, but God, it makes me so nervous.
But yeah, you could jump back in and we've totally spoiled
just
the movie.
Just watch the mist. It's worth it. I'll say it right now, I like the mist a lot.
I do too.
I do. Some of it is a little ham-fisted, but I think it needs to be. Because I think the characters need to be turned up to 11. Like, the archetypes need to be turned up to 11 for this story to work. The story doesn't take place over a long period of time. It's only, a few days?
Yeah, I think so, with that.
And
yeah.
So, realistically, you need to amp the... Like I said, you need to amp up... The religious zealot woman needs to be way over the top. The neighbors that don't get along need to really not get along. You know, like, there have to be... You kind of have to accept the fact that these characters are going to be extreme versions of people you might know or have encountered in your day-to-day life, which is okay. That's fine. But I will say it can come off occasionally as a little ham-fisted. There are moments.
Yeah, I get that criticism.
And King can come off a little ham-fisted sometimes. So
this isn't much of a departure. If you've read Stephen King, you're probably used to this. Yeah.
There are moments in Shawshank and Green Mile that are ham-fisted. So, but no, that the mist is really cool. And I will say this time I watched the black and white version, which I had not seen before this.
Oh yeah, what'd you think?
I liked it a lot. I liked it better, actually. The black and white. You had said this beforehand, but it does cover up some of the CG's a little dodgy in spots. Part of that's because of the age of the movie at this point. Part of it's because it wasn't that great to begin with.
It was a cheap movie.
It was.
At the time.
And that's okay. But the black and white helps cover up some of those gaps in the effects. And it adds an element of dread to the movie, which you should have going into it because it's a rough one, and that ending's a big part of it. And Mrs. Carmody is another big part of it. Stephen King's a very hopeful writer for the most part.
Yeah.
He writes about dark things. He writes about nasty things. We've talked about some of his other works before. But Stephen King always has that glimmer of hope and that glimmer of faith in humanity to pull through, even in the face of just imminent destruction. But in this film, which is an adaptation of his work, that's not present.
Yeah, it's not with these characters.
Not with the people we're following.
Presented with.
Not with the prism through which we are viewing this world. There is no hope. Nobody really does okay in this movie, with the exception of the one woman who's smart enough to get the hell away from these people to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
She winds up rolling by in the truck with her kids, safe and sound at the end, which is...
But if we would have followed her, we would have... it would have been a different movie.
Would have been
a very hopeful movie.
Very true. But, Darabont doesn't give us that.
No, Darabont's very mad at this point.
Yeah, good for him. One thing I will say real quick about this movie that I thought was a lot of fun was Darabont, not too long after this, would go ahead and get working on The Walking Dead,
mm-hmm.
which became a big hit, obviously. It's still going. Darabont's not attached anymore. That's a whole story for another show. But
most behind-the-scenes stories involving Darabont are a whole story for another show.
That's true. But... there's a bunch of Walking Dead cast members in this, which I thought was kind of fun.
Oh, is there?
Oh, yeah. Jeffrey DeMunn, the Laurie Holden.
Oh, she is. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a handful. Even the woman who rolls by safe and sound with her kids at the end is from The Walking Dead.
Okay.
And he shot The Walking Dead pilot. He put together a black and white version of the pilot of that as well, which is kind of fun.
That would be cool.
So you can see some of the genesis of that in here, you know. Anyway... But as its own film, I like The Mist quite a bit. I think it's kind of a fun... it's a bit of a siege story. It's not a traditional like Assault on Precinct 13 level siege story to where like they're being attacked at all sides necessarily. It's more attacked from within, which is kind of a weird reverse version of that. They're almost... What's interesting about most of these types of movies with you've got these disparate characters trapped in one location is that typically they are fighting to keep the enemy out, which in some cases in this film they are. But the majority of this movie is about a small group of those people fighting to get out. To get out from the enemy within. So I thought that was kind of interesting. There's a point when you and the characters that you're kind of following both realize at the same time that you're better off taking your chances out in the mist than you are here because this is getting bad. And you get nervous. At least I did. I got increasingly more and more nervous as... You could tell the characters started getting more scared. You could tell that people started to break down emotionally. You know, after they lose a handful of people or after a tragedy strikes when the giant mosquito creatures bust through the windows, you start to see people, even if they hadn't walked to Mrs. Carmody's side physically yet and started listening to her ramblings, which they will at later on in the movie, you start to see the gears turn in some characters' heads. And you start to see how... Some people, maybe that are a little more weak-minded or a little more scared, would let themselves be roped into the mania that she's spewing, and that's terrifying. That's scarier than any of the giant monsters and stuff, mm-hmm. which are also really cool. But yeah, no, it's cool. I like the human conflict the most in this movie. That's the most interesting part. And I'm a monster movie guy, so for that to be the most interesting part, I think is a testament to what Darabont did. Because by all rights, I should just like the tentacles and the giant spiders and stuff, which I do.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, what's your favorite monster movie? The Thing.
Yeah, which is more about the people too.
More about the people too.
So yeah. Yeah, no, Darabont succeeds once again. It's another great King adaptation from him. And it's bleak. It's bleak.
It's bleak. It is.
There's no getting around that. I mean, Tom Jane kills everybody.
He does.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
He shoots his own child in the head.
He shoots his own child in the head.
Yeah, and an old woman.
And then on top of it, he shoots everybody in the
car. He shoots an old woman, an old man, and the woman who he's bonded with over the course, a fellow survivor, mm-hmm. is after he's discovered his wife is dead and infested with baby spiders. then he shoots his child in the head. And it's not enough that he shoots the kid in the head while he's sleeping. No, Darabont makes sure... that the kid wakes up and looks over at the father pointing the gun at his head before he... So the last thing the kid sees is his dad killing him.
Yeah, be careful if you're watching this for the first time.
Yeah, it's...
Even now, if we're spoiling
it's rough.
Because I don't know if you're prepared.
And then he goes to kill himself, and he's like, oh, that's right, I don't have enough bullets.
And then he walks out...
to try and kill himself.
And then trucks full of survivors just roll by.
Yeah. Like he was literally like 30 seconds away from being saved. It's
so mean.
Is this the meanest ending ever?
I was blown away by this. It's up there. I remember when I watched this, I did not know that's how they were going to end it because I'd read the short story. It does not end like this.
No.
And King has...
They just drive off into the mist at the end of the story,
yeah,
right?
I think so, yeah. And King emailed him. King emailed Darabont after he saw the ending. It's like, if I would have thought of that, I would have used that.
He's like, damn it, Darabont.
Yeah. Because it's... It is not. It's bleak.
It's really bleak.
But it's not in its own weird way. It's not saying everything is hopeless.
No, it's not.
It's saying
not.
You should not give up hope.
It's saying it. Yeah, a lot of what the movie's saying in general is, how about you calm the fuck down?
Yeah,
and don't make rash decisions.
The other amazing thing. The other amazing thing it does throughout. Really, the second half of the movie is as Mrs. Carmody, Marsha Gay Harden's character, as her voice gets louder and louder, and she makes these, it's amazing, she makes these really vague, like, statements and proclamations about what's happening. So it's kind of impossible for her to be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So when characters start listening to her and start coming over to her side, it gets in it gets in their head, and it gets in Tom Jane's head.
Sure.
It gets in his head, and I guarantee you, in that character's head, her voice is running through his head that entire scene.
Oh yeah.
Like, there's no hope. This is what we've done. Mm-hmm. Like, this is God.
Oh, she sticks
back
with him.
Yeah, this is coming. And honestly, the audience too, because I'm in the same boat. Usually, one of the time I watch this, I'm like, well, maybe she's right. Humanity really screwed this one up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Might
this
be
is
time
our
to
punishment.
Go.
Sounds like she makes sense to me. Yeah. And so I'm at the same point as he is at the end. I'm not going to kill the kid. But two movies, by the way, are they off a kid?
Oh, my God.
I think three. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
A lot of kid killing in 2007.
What are we watching? Yeah, they're killing children left and right. That's
like
kind of
crazy
a
in 2007.
Wow. Okay.
So,
as I sit here staring at your Halloween 3 Season of the Witch poster, which right.
kills kids.
Some kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got a type.
child slaughter. Jeez.
So anyway, by that point, you're kind of in the same shoes as he. Like, you're kind of in his shoes. You're in the same place. And so when he pulls the trigger, there's almost, or at least like, at least they got out of there.
Yeah, better like, a bullet to the head than to be ripped apart by monsters.
But as the people, the survivors roll by, you go, "Oh, that's right, that lady's crazy and full of shit." Mm-hmm. Like, why did you listen to her?
Yep,
she's a lunatic.
Yep.
So that's the ending's amazing.
No, it is. It is. It's a sucker punch.
Yeah,
but it's a good sucker punch. Like it's. I don't know. It's up there in terms of not just horror movie endings, but endings in terms of just being.
It's up there with it's like anti Shawshank. It's like the opposite of Shawshank. You should watch a double feature of these two movies.
Yeah, yeah. Shawshank is very much like the if you just keep working towards you'll get there.
Yeah.
This one's like just fucking give up.
Just give up.
But maybe you should have kept trying.
Maybe you should have listened to me in Shawshank. Yeah, you watch this one after Shawshank.
Yeah. it's rough.
It's an angry movie. Darabont seems pretty pissed off at this time. At a lot of things going on in the world.
Sure.
It reminded me a lot of an old Twilight Zone episode. He talks. There's a great introduction to the black and white version. Did you watch that? Where he basically says like the color version is like a mid 70s horror movie, and this is like a mid 60s pre Dawn of the Dead monster movie. And that's a cool way to think about
it. Absolutely.
You were saying something, sorry.
No. I want to say that in terms of the ending. I can only think of one other ending that kind of matches up to the level of, like, holy crap, what did I just watch? It would be 7.
Yeah, good point.
Those two, for some reason, like, it's that good of a sucker punch to where I'm like, it reminds me of how I felt after 7. The black and white thing really is worth checking out. I will say that for sure. And he's right. It feels like a more mature, fully realized version of like a 60s.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It feels, I always thought it kind of felt like a Twilight Zone episode, like the monsters we do on Maidswolf Street, where it's more focused on people sniping at each other and not trusting each other than anything else. So,
yep. Very, and Night of the Living Dead obviously did a lot of that too.
And it really is, it's not subtle. But I don't know if people pay attention to things, but the world is not subtle sometimes. And like, this is kind of a snapshot of America, especially at the time, with all the people yelling at each other about race and political beliefs,
religion,
and the military is involved in a way as well. It's just this really, there's like big city versus small town friction with Bill Sadler's character and Tom Jane. There's some of that. There's all this stuff going on. And no, it's not subtle, but I don't know. It's a horror movie.
Yeah, yeah. I will. Couple things real quick. My I think honestly the most horrifying part of this film to me, and I'm curious to see what you think. Is the young soldier?
Yeah.
Sam Witwer like being killed. It's like I don't know. That always disturbs me more than like even the ending in a way, because the ending is just brutal. But the stabbing of the young soldier and him being like carried out and just tossed outside.
Yeah, he's like a sacrifice.
It's really sad.
Oh God, it's so awful.
And you feel so bad for him because he's just like, I didn't do anything. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I almost wonder if there's kind of a I realize that we definitely, for the most part, treated our soldiers a lot better coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq than we did in Vietnam. But I almost wonder if there's a certain degree of analogy there with that soldier character being kind of persecuted and blamed for the things that the government made him do.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of that.
Yeah.
I think there's a little bit of, because who does the, it's Miss Carmody that instigates it, right?
Oh, yeah.
A very religious, hardline religious person killing him. You could read into that, too.
Mm-hmm.
You have a military dying at the hand, a military member dying at the hands of a...
Of religion?
Of religion, yeah.
That's interesting.
King and I assume Darabont don't seem to be big fans of organized religion.
Probably not so much. see Carrie if you want to get a example.
Especially like hardline religion.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
because Mrs. Carmody is basically Carrie White's mom.
Yes.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to mention was... I love. Darabont is a cinephile. He's one of those directors like a Guillermo del Toro.
He's one of those guys,
or an Eli Roth,
like Scorsese, who you love listen
talk
to
about movies.
Yes.
Because like they're just as big, they're just as passionate about making movies as they are about watching movies as well. And like that's where they started, was watching movies, and they still love it to this day. And Darabont, what I love about this is Darabont's the kind of film nerd that knows who Drew Struzan is, and loves Drew Struzan enough to make a character based on Drew Struzan.
Yeah. Now Drew Struzan, a famous movie artist,
probably
all the Star Wars,
Harry Potter's,
Indiana Jones.
He's done a lot. Some of the more iconic ones. He did those classic. There's a lot of poster artists now that are kind of, I don't want to say aping his style, but doing that similar, like that photorealistic painting style that he kind of made famous. But anyway, the artwork. David Drayton, is that his name? David Drayton?
Yes.
The artwork that David Drayton is painting at the beginning of the film is all Drew Struzan artwork. Those were originals. And Drew Struzan did the poster, one of the posters for The Mist.
Great poster.
Yeah, it's really good. Frank always gets him out of retirement because Drew Struzan's retired and he only comes out for Frank stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, for Darabont stuff.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because they're buddies, yeah. But anyway, so, and then he, there's a really cool portrait of Roland Deschain from Dark Tower.
Yeah.
That's painted by Drew Struzan for this movie. That was painted just for this movie.
That's what Dave Drayton is
painting.
Painting.
Yeah,
at
the beginning of the movie. And I want to say real quick, there's a couple of cool, if you're interested in Drew Struzan, and if you're not, you should be. There are a couple of good things to check out. There is a documentary about him called Drew. It's really good. And they talked to Darabont a lot about Drew Struzan.
Oh, awesome.
And it's really worth checking out. I don't know exactly where it's available. I know it was, they put it out on DVD because I have it on DVD. But I'm sure you can watch it on Amazon streaming or something like that. And then there is I don't know how readily available this is anymore either, but there is a book, an art book of all Drew Struzan's posters.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I have that too. And it's like,
do you?
Oh, it's incredible. It's like page after page of just gorgeous. Like he did Big Trouble in Little China.
What's your favorite poster?
You know what? The one that always I'd have to really think about favorite, but the one that always pops in my head when I think of Drew Struzan is The Thing. That classic poster of the faceless man in the parka with the light coming out of his face. That classic poster. There's something about that image that's just so iconic and just works. But anyway, I love that David Drayton's based on Drew Struzan. I think that's the coolest thing. So
I will say this. So the second biggest gut punch in this movie after the ending is when you see Darabont directing a portion of the movie that features the picture of Roland from the Dark Tower.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, that's right. They made a Dark Tower movie. And Darabont did not direct it. Because Darabont...
He would have killed it.
Darabont gets King.
Yeah.
Darabont probably gets King the best of any director... ever?
It's either Darabont or it's Rob Reiner.
Oh yeah,
those two for me are
what Darabont gets though is he's great with King books. The best King books are all about the strongest parts of those book are character and setting, and Darabont gets both of those.
He does.
And mm-hmm. he really, really gets character, and he really, really gets the humanity in the character. So mm-hmm. so I think that's probably why he's the best.
Yeah, he's awesome. Yeah. And The Mist is awesome, and you should check it out.
Yes.
Either version you can check out. But I honestly suggest the black and white version.
Me too.
I'm a convert now.
Yeah, I don't even... Yeah, I don't...
It won't hurt anything to watch
the... Especially color. Halloween time, watch the black and white version.
Yeah, there's something cool about yeah. that.
It won't hurt watching the other version. You might get taken out by some of the effects that I don't think would bother you as much.
Sure, but it...
In the black and white, but...
It won't hurt anything. Yeah, you know, mute it. Put on the subtitles. Make it a talkie. Or not talkie, make it a...
make it a silent?
Silent film.
A non-talkie?
A non-talkie.
All right, yeah, that's The Mist.
Yeah, that sure is.
Let's move things along here, Willie.
All right.
We're going to talk... It's Halloween time.
It is.
In the world.
In the world.
In the good old US of A.
It is.
We're getting ready. Get ready to hand out some candy to some whippersnappers. You hand out candy?
I won't. I live in an apartment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so.
Gotcha.
I don't think that they do that.
Yeah, I don't think they do either. Because I remember when I lived in an apartment, I don't remember.
They didn't last year, so.
Yeah.
I assume.
Yeah, you have to go. If you're going to an apartment, you got to go to like the complex uh-huh. place, like the head yeah. of the complex. Yeah, you're right. But we like candy, right?
Yeah. I do.
We like Halloween candy.
Sure.
So I wanted to talk our favorite Halloween candies and some of our least favorite candies.
Okay.
Willie, start us off. Like, what's one of your... What you want to do, best or worst first?
What do you want to do? I don't care.
Let's do best first.
All right.
Let's end it at a downer.
Like, okay, sure.
Like, are the movies.
Sure. I mean, I've always been a Twizzler fan. I love me some Twizzlers. I don't know if that counts as a Halloween candy.
No, I'm counting it. Like the little bite-sized ones?
Yeah, the little bite-sized guys. Big fan of Twizzlers. Those little mini peanut butter cups, little Reese's mini ones.
Yeah, I've got peanut butter cups too. Yep. And honestly, any Reese's cup, yeah. No matter the shape. I like the foil ones.
Yeah.
I like the classic foil.
Yep.
But if you give me a pumpkin one, a pumpkin shape one.
I imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah, come Easter, I'll eat little Easter egg ones.
Yep.
That's cool. Kit Kats.
Yeah, bite-sized Kit Kats.
I love Kit Kats, yeah. man. Big fan.
Throw some Kit Kats and a little peanut butter. You got yourself a nice treat.
Oh, dude, good to go. Reese's Pieces. Another delightful Reese's.
Yes.
Those little plastic packages of them. Big fan of those. Number one, though, of all, period, Swedish Fish.
Swedish Fish. You're a big Swedish Fish fan.
Love Swedish Fish.
Okay.
Little bag of Swedish Fish, I'm going to town.
Okay.
That thing is going to get eaten.
Yeah.
Like, the whole thing.
I need to try. I haven't had, like, Swedish Fish in a while.
I love them.
They make Swedish Fish ice cream at this place called Treat Dreams in Ferndale. And I think Amy really, really likes it.
I might have to get some.
Because Amy likes Swedish Fish, too.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
How about you? What do you got?
Some of my best. I've got Reese's Cups.
Sure.
I really like, so, those Mr. Goodbar and Crackles. Those bite-sized ones, because
tasty.
You can't find, especially Crackle.
Crackle's A+. Where it's at, dude.
Yeah, A+. Because you can't find big Crackle bars. I never see them.
Nope.
I only see them around Halloween time.
Just
when they
little
come
bite-sized
the,
ones.
The bite-sized ones. But I specifically those two, because I'm not crazy about just plain chocolate Hershey's.
Yeah.
They're fine.
I get that.
I am a huge, huge fan of candy corn.
Are you?
I love candy
corn. I'm going to come right out and say it's on my bottom five.
Is it on
my
bottom five?
Never liked candy corn, man.
Oh, man. I don't know what it is. And you know what? It was as I got older, too, because as a kid, you get it, and I didn't like it. It was like two,
yeah.
whatever. But now, like, I will go buy a bag of candy corn soon.
Nice.
Straight caramel, just like caramel.
Okay.
Regular caramel. Speaking of caramel, those caramel apple pops.
Those are pretty delightful.
Those are so good, and they're horrible for your teeth.
Awful.
You put those in, and you feel like you're going to tear out.
There's a solid chance that one of your teeth is coming out. It's like Jolly Ranchers.
It's at least going to get a filling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you bite into one of those hard enough, you're in trouble, pal.
And you can't resist the urge to bite sometimes.
No.
I really like the Fun Size Nerds.
Oh, yeah, the little boxes.
Mix them
yeah.
together.
Yep.
And then the last one I have on there are the flavored Tootsie Rolls.
Sure.
Like yep. the strawberry.
The blue raspberry.
We used to have those at work,
bananas
remember?
One, yeah.
We used to have those at work. That
we did.
I think that one guy took them all.
Yeah, he used to cut that out.
Loaded his shirt up.
Oh, yeah, he walked away with them. I'm like, you're not even in this apartment.
This gentleman, he's not a listener.
I'm sure he's not.
We had a jar of candy. This man took his polo shirt,
and dumped a bunch of it in his shirt.
Held it out, so he made a basket and dumped it in his shirt.
Walked away.
Walked away.
He doesn't work in that group.
It was the most brazen thing. I could not believe it.
It's infuriating. Oh man. Okay. Yeah. Bottom five candy corn makes the cut. I haven't been a fan. It's the consistency. It's waxy.
It is weird.
Yeah. Laffy Taffy.
Just not a big Laffy. Little Laffy. Is it the jokes or?
I just don't like. It's another consistency one. It's not chewy enough. It's weird. I don't like it. Plain M&Ms. Ugh.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll eat them, but like I don't want to eat
peanut,
them.
Give me peanut butter.
Give me peanut.
Peanut
crispy. Or peanut butter. Give me anything. Why would I want that?
Yeah.
Give me something in it. hot tamales.
Yeah. Hot. Yeah.
I don't like them.
That's a good choice.
I don't want my candy to be hot. I want my Mexican food to be hot.
No. Yeah. You want a dessert.
Yeah.
Like a dessert. Like you want something sweet.
Refreshing.
Yeah.
Not burn my mouth. That sucks. You're maniacs. the worst though. Let's just come right out and say Good and Plenty's. Good and Plenty's are awful.
Good and Plenty's are bad. Do you like Airheads?
I like Airheads slightly better than I like Laffy Taffy.
Good and Plenty. Okay, Good and Plenty. Remind me of Good and Plenty.
Good and Plenty are the little capsule candies that come in a purple box, and the Good and Plenty's are like purple, pink, and white. And they're filled with black licorice.
Oh, okay.
And they're awful.
Can I tell you a secret about me?
Sure.
I like black licorice.
You
but
are,
it's not on my top candy.
You're an insane person.
But if someone has
how are you?
If someone has black licorice, give me some black licorice and candy corn, and I'm upset.
How do you live with yourself, Tim?
You know what? It's just like even Jaeger couldn't ruin black licorice for me because it's like the same taste.
Yeah, I don't like Jaeger.
Yeah. I don't like Jaeger either. I like black licorice. Okay.
Right, well, we found things.
But no,
that we
good. Thank you. But Good and Plenty's aren't bad.
See, if we had known each other as kids, we would have been able to do a pretty good job trading.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My worst here. I got a hot take here. I got something. I'm throwing some fire. I don't like Starburst that much.
Okay.
They're too chewy.
Okay.
They're too tart for me. The lemon one is. I mean, lemon one. Yellow ones are always bad.
Candy's
always bad.
I don't know why they make lemon candy at this point.
No, kids hate them. They do it. I mean, they do it to fill the bag. I'm pretty sure you got to take the good with the bad. Basically.
I guess
you just want pink Starburst. Basically.
No, they do it because if they one day just decided like we're gonna remove the yellow Starburst, it's leaving. The internet would explode. All the yellow Starburst fans would come out of the woodwork and be like, "No, don't take it away."
Yeah, they're like, "Are you robbing kids of yellow Starburst?"
All you ever want to eat is red and pink. Starburst.
Yeah.
The rest of
the orange
garbage.
Is boring. Yeah.
Get out of here.
Dum Dums. Dum Dums suck because it's like barely a sucker.
It's not enough.
It's tiny. You get Dum Dums at the bank.
Yep.
And that's it.
Or the doctor's office.
You go into the bank, you deposit your check, or you pay the bank money probably. And you go, "Hey, fuckers, I'm taking a dum-dum for my trouble." I had to come into the bank.
Enjoy my interest.
Nobody comes into the bank, and I did, so I'm taking this dum-dum.
Yeah. Butterscotch ones are nice, though, but they don't last long enough.
I kind of like the mystery ones, but I always get, like, pina colada.
Yeah. Who wants that?
Dum-dums. Werther's Originals, just boring.
Yeah, they're tasty, but they're boring.
Boring.
I agree.
Those black and orange ones, those wax ones.
Sure.
Those have not grown on me in the way candy corn has. Like, those are kind of a boring Halloween candy, too. But you always get those, and you're just like, I'd rather have a Snickers. And then pennies. You ever get pennies?
Oh, you just pennies?
Yeah, like a bag of pennies.
Yeah, it's stupid.
I feel so bad, too, because it's always like old ladies.
I know.
They get in, like, they're like, they couldn't probably make it to the store and buy candy.
But it's like, turn your porch light on.
You can't eat.
Because then I have to fake that I'm excited about these pennies.
I can't eat pennies.
No. I can't get sugar high
on
pennies.
Put this in.
What am I going to do? Snort this?
Yeah, I guess I'll put it in my piggy bank and forget it's there.
Yeah, and go buy candy with it.
It's a nice gesture, probably, unless they're just being mean about it.
Couple quick things. One thing I forgot to mention and I needed to. You know those dots that come on paper? Those candy dots that come on like strips of paper?
No.
They're terrible. You eat more paper than you do dot. It's awful.
Candy dots that come
they're
on
like little
paper.
Like dots of like hard candy that are, like I guess they just drop the liquid onto pieces of paper and they like
what? Never seen that.
Yeah, it's not good.
How do you eat them?
you had to peel them off the paper, but it peels like half the paper. Whether you just eat it with
so stupid.
So stupid. Two quick stories about trick-or-treating. I don't want to stay too long, but one, there was a lady that always gave out VHS tapes.
What? Did you get any hidden treasure?
They were always animated Bible stories.
Very good. Very good. Was it Miss Carmody from The Mist?
Probably. The other one was a woman who lived one block over from you and one block down. I hope she doesn't still live there because I'm about to scare you. She'd give out like burnt like figurines and stuff.
Wait, what?
Like little like wicker people that she made that were like half burnt and had like straw coming out of them and stuff. It was terrifying.
What?
Yeah, we're all pretty sure she was a witch of some sort. We stopped going there.
So she would burn them.
Yeah, she would make
them and then burn them.
I guess.
That's so strange.
Or like little dogs that she'd make out of like wood and stuff and then like carve eyes.
You think they
them.
Were like failed like voodoo experiments?
I don't know.
Like she's like, it didn't work, give it to the kids.
That's real life though. Because one of my best friends in elementary school lived right next door to her. It's terrifying. we'll walk by the house one night. I'll show you. Yeah.
Please do.
So.
Please do.
I don't know if she's still there. But anyway, she was terrifying. Speaking of trick-or-treating.
Speaking of trick-or-treating. That sounds like a trick and a treat.
Yeah, it was something.
We're going to talk
sacrifice.
We're going to talk about Trick-or-Treat.
Yeah.
Directed by Michael Dougherty.
Mm-hmm.
A film that was technically released in 2007. At the Button-Umathon event in Austin, Texas.
Okay.
Big festival there. But it didn't really get released until like 2 or 3 years later. It got a crap release date. The studios kind of screwed it over.
Yes.
But it's Trick or Treat. Interwoven stories demonstrate that some traditions are best not forgotten as the residents of a small town face real ghosts and goblins on Halloween. Tales of terror revealed the consequences of extinguishing a jack-o'-lantern before midnight and a grumpy hermit's encounter with a sinister trick-or-treater. Stars Anna Paquin, Dylan Baker, Brian Cox, Leslie Bibb. Willie.
Mm-hmm.
Trick-or-treat. Trick-or-treat. Happy Halloween.
Trick-or-treat's so good.
It's the best.
There's nothing I dislike about trick-or-treat. Every story is fun.
The only one that doesn't click with me is the werewolf one.
Okay.
But that's it, and even that's fun.
I kind of dig the werewolf one, and the only reason why I say that is because it's the weakest of the bunch for me. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing, you got to have a little sex in your Halloween horror movie.
Yeah.
And they're very sexy werewolves.
They are, and I like the use of the song.
It's a very good use of the song, which could be used in so many crappy ways, and it has been in other movies. But like,
it's Marilyn Manson's Sweet Dreams.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I love the it feels like an 80s horror movie and like in its little twist, you know, like because it's, you know, the hunter becomes the hunted, the Dylan Baker character who's amazing.
You know, I think that's, I don't have too much deep to say about why I don't like that segment other than I just don't like it that much. It never really clicks with me, but I think it's because the Dylan Baker, like him being connected to it, just feels like one step too far. Like he's a busy guy.
Yeah, he gets around. Yeah. Yo, and it doesn't really fit his modus operandi, does it? Because it's like he's obviously into like offing kids, and now he, for some reason, he wants to like be a vampire.
Be a vampire. It doesn't really bother me.
Whatever.
But
I like that he gets his comeuppance in the best way possible. It's pretty cool. But no, you know what my favorite story in this thing is?
Which one?
The kids in the school bus.
Okay, that is, I do like that one a lot.
I kind of love it. Mm-hmm. Cause it's exactly the kind of story you would tell your friends around Halloween. Like, somebody in the group would convince everybody that this happened in their town, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this time it's true. Like, they get down there, and that bus is down there, and they're like, oh no, that really happened. Like, instantly you're like, get out of there. Go. Leave. What are you kids doing? You're stupid. And I like the little girl that they're kind of
she's a cool character.
Picking on. She's really cool. Yeah. Because she's clearly on the spectrum. I think that much is obvious. And I like that there's kind of a protagonist character who, like, I don't know, like she gets the last laugh, you know, but she happens to be on the spectrum. I think it's interesting.
I also like it too, because very early, when you think about Halloween and trick or treat, you always think about the treat part.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think about the trick part as much. And so that was a trick.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, that's cool. And I like the, there's a bit with her and Sam, and let's just say Sam is so cool.
Sam is like iconic.
Yes.
2000s character.
He's been in one film.
He's awesome.
But he's so cool.
He's adorable.
Yeah, he's even also a little horrifying too.
Yeah, I think he's cute.
He's so cool. Like, I love Sam.
Yeah.
Like, there's a good chance I will dress my child up as Sam, at some juncture.
Oh, please do.
But anyway, no, Sam is so cool. But there's a cool little bit where her and Sam, and this is at the point where you've realized as a viewer that these stories are intertwined, which is one of the most fun parts of the movie. But her and Sam kind of cross each other's paths, and they kind of give each other like a little bit, like a little like nod almost. It's fun.
Yeah.
Like the two of them are just like, hey, you know, I love that. I don't know what it is about that, but I just love that little interaction. And the dead kids freak me out in that story too.
Yeah.
Like they're kind of spooky. In all their like old school Halloween masks and stuff. And then you get the kind of payoff for it when you realize that the Brian Cox character was the bus driver, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. He was the one that killed the kids, which explains why he's kind of a dick.
Yeah.
Right.
He's like an Ebenezer Scrooge, but for Halloween.
Yep. Yeah. And Sam gets to beat him up pretty good.
Yeah, he does. He does. Yeah, Sam's awesome.
He's so cool.
Yeah, he's. What's your favorite performance in this? Because I think there are a few like big ones. Like there.
Dylan Baker's pretty good.
He's incredible.
Because he's going.
It's either him or Cox.
Brian Cox is really good too. Yeah, those two are really.
Brian Cox is good all the time.
Sure.
So is Dylan Baker.
Yeah.
So.
I've never disliked either one of them. Mm-hmm. No, Dylan Baker's crazy in this, like in the best way.
He's so funny.
When he's trying to like snuff out the kid that he thought he killed. This, and it's a scene that in any other like movie or in any other like even like an inch or two into like darker territory, it would be a horror. Like the concept behind what's happening in that scene is awful.
Yeah.
Like he's got a kid buried in his backyard who's in a bag.
Yeah.
Who's struggling to get out.
He's not dead either.
And he starts stomping on the kid and like it's horrifying.
It's like a slapstick comedy
of child murder. like but it's such a funny scene.
Yeah.
You can't help but laugh.
Yeah.
And it's the absurdity, like the dog is coming over and barking and he's tossing a finger at the dog.
Yeah, and Brian Cox is like screaming at him.
Yeah, he's a grouchy neighbor in his bathrobe and
and he has a couple funny lines of that, too, if I recall. Yeah,
it's pretty good. It's such a ridiculous scene. But, yeah, Dylan Baker kills it. So does Brian Cox. So mm-hmm. Both of them.
I don't have much to say about this. This is this is kind of one of my go-to Halloween movies. It's perfect.
Isn't it incredible how... I mean, obviously, we're 10 years removed now, so it can be considered kind of a classic at this point, I feel like. That's fair mm-hmm. to consider it a genre classic. But, but I mean, even like a year after this came out, it was in rotation for me. It did not take long.
It captures. I love Halloween, and I think it's a Halloween. Halloween's a Halloween movie.
We're talking about you love John Carpenter.
John Carpenter's Halloween.
Okay, I got you.
But it's not about Halloween. You know what I mean? It takes
the
place
title
on Halloween.
It takes place on Halloween.
It captures the season. I think pretty well. Mm-hmm.
There's Halloween imagery in it.
There's Halloween imagery. Mm-hmm. This is about Halloween.
It's a celebration of
Halloween, and the set design is phenomenal. Those pumpkins, are so cool.
Pretty like fantastic.
It feels like you're walking into like the coolest Halloween store you've ever been in, you get immersed in the town.
Yep.
And it feels, I love the structure of it. It's an anthology movie, mm-hmm. but it's not at the same time. It's
well,
like
the interconnectivity helps to. Separate from a lot of the horror anthologies that are out there, I think. Don't you think? I mean, that's the big thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because like a movie like a Creepshow, there's not really...
There's no real connector. Tales from the Hood, is that...
There's a little bit of a connection
there's
in Tales
from the
Hood.
There's a little bit of connection in Tales from the
Hood. Cat's Eye is the only one I can think of that also has a bit of a connection because it's got the cat through all the films. But that's pretty loose, too, so...
No, it's really mean, but that's okay because Halloween can be...
It can be. It can be tricks.
It can be tricks. It feels like an R-rated Goosebumps movie.
110%.
And I mean that as a compliment because I love Goosebumps.
Yes.
I liked the Goosebumps movie that came out with a couple years ago now, I think. I thought it was fun.
It was a lot of fun, yeah.
I kind of wish it was a little meaner, though. I don't want this level. I don't want a rated R Goosebumps. But you can make it Goosebumps was a straight up comedy. You can make it a little scarier, I think.
Yeah, you can make it a little because this movie has this is not a horror movie that I wouldn't be like overly cautious about showing a younger person this. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think, I mean, I think there might be some nudity in the werewolf sequence. It's pretty brief. And
it's not real graphic.
No, it's not. And the violence is pretty, for the most part, kind of cartoonish and silly. So this is borderline like entry level horror, but I mean that in a good way too. Like once again, that's a compliment. That's not, there should be more movies like this. I feel like,
yeah, me too.
That flirt between safe and really scary.
Yeah.
You know, this movie reminds me a lot of Monster Squad in its tone.
Monster Squad is a good one. Yeah. Yep.
I don't know why, but it does. But no, this is the best movie about Halloween, that and Season of the Witch.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This could have used maybe some Tom Atkins.
Yeah, he's not in this, is he?
I mean, maybe in the sequel.
Well, there's a Carpenter connection with Brian Cox.
Yeah, his character is based on...
He modeled the look of his character after John Carpenter.
That cracks me up.
I think I have a story.
That really cracks me up.
It was actor Brian Cox. Oh, this is from... to give credit, it was taken from Dread Central. Brian Cox came up with the look for his character, Mr. Creeb, taking initial inspiration from rockers like Jerry Garcia and David Crosby.
I see the Crosby.
Yep.
He's got a weird nose piece, doesn't he?
I think so. Yeah. The biggest inspiration for the look, however, was a man who knows a little something about Halloween, John Carpenter. Story goes that Cox had met Carpenter several years prior, taking note of the fact that he looked like he was plucked straight out of the 70s. That's precisely the way Cox wanted Creed to look, and so various prosthetics were added to his face to make him look like Carpenter.
Incredible.
The David Crosby thing's really funny.
Yeah, because he kind of looks like a weird love child of David Crosby and John Carpenter.
Yeah,
so
he does.
It's perfect.
His
dog's name is Spite.
Spite, yeah. I thought it was Spike because I watch it with the captions on.
Spite.
Do you watch it with closed captioning on?
I watch like all my movies with, it's weird.
We're so old.
But I just do it because, I don't know why I do it.
I do it, you know what, I do it for a couple reasons. One is I normally watch them later at night, and there's usually a lot of screaming in horror movies.
I tend to keep them down,
Yep. The other reason is, because I kind of probably have some sort of form of attention.
Okay.
I don't have a long attention span.
Sure.
It helps me focus on the plot.
Okay.
To read the dialogue. And it helps clarify things as I go.
Yeah, I think I started doing it because of the noise reason. I lived with a couple roommates, and before that with my parents and stuff, and I'd stay up late watching movies. I mean, I'd be up till 3-4 in the morning sometimes. And so I wanted to keep them real low, and I didn't want to wake anybody up, you know, that's rude. But and then I a lot of the movies I would watch, I got into like a lot of foreign movies for a while, so I just got used to having the subtitles on, I think. And even with like thick accents, even if they're speaking English, but like,
oh my gosh,
you know,
in Bruges, if
sure,
I recall.
That's a good example of one. Yeah, absolutely. Where like it was helpful.
It couldn't make sense of it. Yeah.
So,
anything else to say about Trick or Treat?
No, it's awesome. We need a sequel. Awesome. It's time. I harassed Doherty on Twitter.
Good.
So hopefully he at least saw that.
He did Krampus, right?
Yeah.
You like Krampus?
Yeah, I do.
I like Krampus a lot.
Too. I do. It's fun.
You like this or Krampus?
Better?
Yeah.
Trick or Treat.
Me too.
Yeah, for sure. No.
Krampus is fun. I like Krampus.
I had fun with Krampus, yeah.
Krampus also has beautiful design.
It does.
It's gorgeous looking.
You can tell it's the same guys that worked on Trick or Treat.
Yep.
I mean, that like it feels like it's from the same. It could be in the same universe. I saw a cool little piece of fan art online. I think I saved it on my phone, but I was looking for... I wanted to tweet out something about Sam because he's, you know... I mean, how could you not? And I found this little piece of fan art. It's him and Krampus hanging out together. And I thought it was really sweet. I'm showing it to Tim right now.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, it's Sam giving... he's going to give Krampus his little... jack-o'-lantern lollipop. And it looks like Krampus is accepting it.
Both those, did they ever come out with a good DVD? Did Scream Factory or anybody come out with a good DVD or Blu-ray of this?
Trick or Treat is coming out to Scream Factory.
Awesome. Blu-ray. I might pick that up.
I believe it is.
The DVD I got from like Blockbuster or something, and it has his short film. He did like a short animated film.
Uh-huh.
And it's a cute little thing, but that's it. There's nothing else.
I know which one you're talking about. Yeah, because that's on there. Yeah.
Because they crapped this thing out. Yeah, it kind of bums me out how they treated this movie.
No, it's sad.
And it's stupid. I mean, just... Because Sam is kind of like, he's a cult character a little bit, but he's also, he's so cool looking. He could have been,
oh.
He could have been huge, I thought.
No, and it wasn't a great, I don't know. The movie wasn't marketed well. It wasn't released well. This was an example of, this is legit. I know that, like you just said, Eli Roth was kind of upset about, he's talked about how he's upset about how Hostel 2 was handled. Like, Mike Dougherty has definite reason to be.
Yeah.
I don't think he talks about it, but I don't blame him if he is.
Yeah, because I think this is Warner Brothers, and I think Krampus is Universal. Mm. So he didn't work with them again, I guess. So.
Well, hopefully we get a sequel at some point. I would love to. I know they've continued it in comic book form.
Have they?
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems to have caught on. It seems to have a fan base.
Mm-hmm.
I love seeing it. I kind of like, I have this nerdy thing where I like seeing like current, like when I go to a convention or something, like seeing current like horror characters like next to like the icons.
It's cool. It is cool. Nice.
Even if it's like the dude from Don't Breathe.
Yeah, who cares? With his turkey baster.
Like, I didn't love Don't Breathe, but I like seeing him.
Yeah,
I like
absolutely.
Seeing him next to Freddy.
I dig Trick or Treat a lot, and I dig Sam a lot.
Yeah.
They released a lot of little plushies and stuff of him. I think it's really cute.
Yeah.
I just want to hang out with the little dude. You know? Like, I would take Sam trick-or-treating.
Yeah.
He's adorable.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to kill me. I hope he wouldn't attack me, but...
Yeah.
I don't think
you
I'd
have
break.
To dress your kid up like Sam for Halloween.
I'll see what I can do.
Yeah.
I think I could convince my wife of that. Wouldn't take much.
She's a fan of Sam, isn't she?
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. How could you not be? I couldn't marry somebody who wasn't a fan of Sam.
Crazy if you aren't.
Yeah.
All right, Willie. I think that's it for 2007.
Yep. I'm good.
We're gonna do another one next episode.
Yeah. We've decided on 1985.
Yes.
Yes. And we're doing and I hope this doesn't break anybody's hearts, but we're doing a trio of zombie films from 85. Because we kind of want to examine the how different these three movies about a similar, not plot, but similar subject matter, how they handle it and succeed to varying degrees. And that'll be Romero's Day of the Dead, which I'm real excited to talk about. And then Stuart Gordon's Reanimator, also a classic. And finally, Return of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
Which is, it's something else.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I'm excited for this. I know they're all zombie movies, but these are this is a really good year, though.
85 is insane, and it was the only reason I was able to pick three movies that quickly was because I thought, oh, that'd be cool to do three zombie movies.
Because we got Fright Night.
Yep.
We got The Stuff. We got Silver Bullet. The three we named. We got Life Force, Cat's Eye, Nightmare 2, Friday the 13th, A New Beginning, Ghoulies, of course, Phenomenon.
Ghoulies.
The Mutilator. Howling 2, Your Sister's a Werewolf.
That, Christopher Lee, I believe, utters that line, by the way.
What's that?
Your sister is a werewolf. I believe that's Christopher Lee that gets that famous line.
Demons, Wes Craven's Chiller. There's a really awful story about Howling 2.
Is there?
Where they the woman, she flashes the camera at some point, like she shows her breasts on screen.
Okay.
And I think there was like, I can't remember if the director was very like spiteful, like very didn't like working with her. And so over the end credits, like they just freeze on her breasts to the screen, and she ran out of the premiere like crying.
That's so sad.
It's so sorry.
That's horrible.
It's awful, isn't it? So
a terrible thing to do to somebody.
Yeah. So if you liked that movie and I ruined it for you, I'm really sorry.
Yeah, I'm never gonna watch it. No, I'm just kidding. I'll probably still watch it.
Yeah.
I'm not that nice of a person.
No, but I do think it was really shitty.
Yeah, that's really horrible.
Are there big fans of Howling 2?
I don't know. I'm sure.
That's it for this
week.
That's
a wrap. Yep.
See you next time.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye, man. And one more.